Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
With a bang for the last time in 2019. It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with your boy, the Brian Campbell, all box, all the damn time on this holiday week. I think I've already told a lie to start off this show. This won't be the last show of this year, but this is a great show, by the way, as we will hit up our year-end 2019 awards, recap a surprisingly wild weekend in the sport of boxing, including Chavez's Junior's return, possible exit for good, who knows? And also that wild and exciting Charlo Harrison Deuce rematch. Look ahead to the return of Gervonta Davis this weekend and a lot of fun in between. And listen, an early shout out. Gonna have a bonus pod this week. It's Christmas week, okay? Hanukkah week, whatever you're celebrating. Kwanzaa, we're gonna celebrate with you. Be on the lookout. I got some interviews in the can. Wow. Hey, it's a tough place. With a few of these big names that you're going to want to check out later this week. But right now, it's about this show. It's about the end of the year. The last two weekends in box, we're going to look backwards. We are going to look forward, and there's only one man that I can do that with. He's my co-host. He's fired up for Christmas so much that he's wearing green and growing a red beard to stay in the mood for that. And when I say in the mood, you know where I'm going with that.
Ginger.
Don't we all? But this is an New York Times best-selling author, Ginger, and also the voice of boxing on theathletic.com. His name is Rafe Bartholomew.
Let me lick you up. Let me lick you down. Tony Harrison. Let me lick you all around. Oh, let me lick you, girl. Like your lover. I just have to happen like that.
Boom, 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 boom. Rafe Bugs. Back in Detroit, back where you belong, back with a bang. How the hell are you?
Back where we belong. Doing pretty good. Getting pumped.
How many? More than once?
I pump it more than once. Yes, I do. All right. Is there a problem with that, Brian?
No.
And folks, it's magnificent.
Big fan of that. Shout out to Richard Dwyer. By the way, Richard Dwyer's beard. Man, he's going for it right now. Did you see him in the camo the other day? You sent me so much great Dwyer sound. Did not have the time to load it up. But 2020 is going to be a big year. We're going to get a lot of fake Dwyer on the board. We might get the real Dwyer. But right now, it's wartime in Dwyer's house.
You know, I'm starting to get a little worried about the man because, you know, we know that Dwyer does a little bit of divorce lawyering. Maybe things are not well in the Dwyer household.
You can't pin that on. You can't, like, hey, maybe. I mean, look, certainly Richard has a stick.
He does.
But, you know, you don't know what's going on in that house, okay? That we want to know. That's what we want to know. What's in those totes? What's in that red Solo cup he's got?
I would like to look at the whole man when it comes to Richard Dwyer, but he's not showing it to us.
Man, we got to make a pilgrimage to Mountain View or Campbell, if you will.
Why not both? They're not too far from each other.
All right. Maybe we'll call up 2018 Listener of the Year, Alex Godinez of nearby Sacramento, and make a journey there. Will Alex Godinez repeat, though? That's what you got to tune into today's show to find out, Rafe. Year-end awards. Box has been an interesting friggin' year in 2019. Rafe, I'm not going to ask you outright right now. Our awards will come, you know, who's the fighter of the year, all that. But every year seems to have something we will remember it by most. A fighter, a moment, a fight. Something, a development, a bit of news where you're like, that calendar year, you know, 2007, I think Floyd and Oscar on the cover of Sports Illustrated and Floyd becoming a crossover star, right? You know, 2015, I think the launch of PBC and MAPAC. That's what happened that year, right? 2014. Rod Salka, baby. Rod Salka. Okay.
Thanks. Read my mind.
Okay, yes. At least somebody got the trunks right with the bricks on them. Exactly.
The trunks were wrong on that occasion.
Actually, you're right. You're right. Indeed. You know, people say words like 2017 to me. I think about this.
You're Manny Pacquiao. You do not need to be getting knocked out and put to sleep by Joe Horn.
Hey, did you hear or see Stephen A. Smith doing 90 minutes on All the Smoke with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, a Showtime property?
A friend of mine actually told me about it and said it was fantastic. He said that, you know, Captain Jack and Matt Barnes maybe spoke for 5 to 10 minutes of that entire podcast.
That is true. That is true. And Captain Jack will get you high tonight. If you're hanging around him, I'd like to sometime. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Shout out to
Brian, there's one major year in the decade that we overlooked, and you know what it is. Yeah. 2013, Brian.
What? Are you talking about things like moments like Floyd Canelo, or are you talking about
athletes sleep with a lot of women? It's 2013. That's what we
did. Yeah, that is what they did. That's what they did. Well, 2013 was Maidana sending Broner through the ropes. That's what I think of. But Rafe, long winded way to start off and say 2019 boxing. What do you think of, bro? Seatbelt season. What do you think of?
Seatbelt season was short and didn't last as long as we wished it would have, Brian. No, I think that 2019 has to be the streaming, the platform wars, and the good and the bad that has come with that. The just gigantic, the proliferation of boxing content in so many forms on so many different platforms, different ways to watch, and it being at times overwhelming. It producing more high level, really, really great fights that are still happening today, probably more coming this week as we head into the last days of the year. Thank you, Japan. So the good, that's the positive, is just like the sheer volume of really great fights. I think, and this is a rich man's problem. There's so much good boxing happening that it can be hard to appreciate it all. I have a hard time coming up with who really stood out or what was there a theme in the sport. It's just so much going on. It feels like it was 3 or 4 years packed into one. And personally, I tried to sleep with 4 times as many women in 2019 to pack in as much action in 1 year.
Somebody slipped me a Jimmy. Somebody, it was the meat of Mexico.
No. Rafe, was it the year of the loan?
Brian, I was not conscious when I was in that video. Okay, I was knocked out. Someone did slip me a Jimmy, and then slip me a couple of other Johnnies.
Mama finger, papa finger, hey, so good.
Rafe, if 2018 in boxing was the year of the load, was 2019 the year of load management?
No, we had fighters shooting loads.
And it was well managed, though, this year. I mean, it was reckless last year.
That's true. We last year, we were shooting a new load every weekend.
We've been doing loads since the beginning. Yes, indeed.
This year was more of a tantric year in the sport of boxing. But you know what that means? That means the eventual climax is even greater, more satisfying. Could like reaching enlightenment, nirvana. It's almost a religious experience.
I think you should finish on that category. Yeah, 19 was the streaming wars. DAZN launched for real in September of 2018. 19, they went at it. They signed Triple G. Canelo was swimming in cash. We saw,
women and women with their own condominiums.
That is true. We saw Fox take a giant step forward, becoming really the as they would call it, the premier package holder in the PBC universe, having a monster opening year for pay-per-views. And I think we saw the continuation of this Renaissance heavyweight era. We didn't end up getting the matches we wanted most or deserved, but the era is so fertile that we effed around and ended up with 2 Joshua Ruiz fights and a fat Mexican guy as heavyweight champion. And we had some moments. We had some events. What you need to make a great boxing year is you need cornerstone marquee events. We don't have like Floyd anymore. And we only got, who did Canelo? Oh, yeah, Canelo had two events, but they really weren't massive. We didn't get those, but I think we had a consistent level of, like, solid. Like, you know, you get, like, a Pacquiao, Thurman, Spence Porter, like, you know, Wilder in a couple. You get, there was a consistent stretch, but to make it a really good year, you need that. But you also need the hardcore fights. You know, like, 2013 was a tremendous year. Because Showtime went after it. They got the PBC lineup. And suddenly every week there's great fights and fights that weren't supposed to be great turn into great fights. And it gets contagious. We had that to a certain degree in 2019 because of the proliferation of the streaming wars where DAZN's just picking up foreign fights left and right. The WBSS is rolling. This was a great ass year. Just to give you in perspective, traffic wise, in 2019 on CBSSports.com for boxing, we doubled the boxing traffic of the year before.
Okay, Brian, let me
And that was without a Maymac. That was without a, you know, one of those type deals. It seemed like a pretty damn good marquee year, even if it didn't have a couple mountaintop marquee moments, Rafe.
Yeah. Do you think that that could just be there are twice as many events almost and hence twice as many things for people to look at? Or do you feel like that these events are actually packing more of a punch that boxing is really what's up?
No, boxing's still bloated because of the bubble. It's a bubble right now. OK, boxing's cheap programming. That's why the streaming war started. It's putting money in people's pockets. People that work on this podcast. It's
like who?
Oh, yeah. but the bubble will eventually burst, you would think. You know, wow. Hey, Rafe, CBS Sports is Brandon Wise stopping. I don't know if you've heard him before on the MMA podcast.
I have heard, you know, I'm still waiting
for
Be Wise to give you that work, Brian.
Well, I mean, you know, Rafe, we didn't get into our awards yet, but the award for the one fight fans wanted, one fight fans needed in 2019, but did not get. Was hashtag Campbell Wise, survive or die.
So you're nominating yourself for the jacker of the year.
No, okay. If you want to talk about jacking in 2019, it was certainly Terrence Bud Crawford on this podcast, right?
I'm not my pick, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. John Fury did not win that award. All right, we know that. Tyson Fury would never pull out something Rafe regularly did in college. But the question of whether it's my fault that this fight didn't happen is an easy answer. No, Brandon Wise violated the spirit of the contract by joining a professional MMA gym, Hard Knocks 365, and training with actual fighters. Rafe, when you're the guy with the 15-year age advantage, with the height advantage, with the strength advantage, and then you're joining a professional gym to get ready for like what would have been a pickup game version of boxing sparring, I don't know about that. It's a little shady.
Brian, this sounds like the kind of excuse making I heard from Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. over the weekend.
How dare you?
I see you coming in overweight for this fight. I don't know. I think you should get what you deserve.
There was a contract. There was a spirit
of the
contract.
There was no contract. First of all,
we don't believe in contract. Hey, Bob.
First of all, you are the one. You're the only one saying there was any oral contract to be had here because
no oral. Okay.
Because we were trying to make this happen. We had planned this out to the point where everybody in our office was going to be a part of this, and
we had referees, we had judges,
and yet. A few months go by, and I don't hear a word from you about this. You aren't in training. I took him to the gym with me. He died in the warm-up and then just threw some very ugly uppercuts that we may or may not have video of still that I can send you, Rafe.
Rafe, I was setting a mental facade, showing him at my worst pre-training.
This was like Andy Ruiz in the Dank City.
Yes.
Day in the
Life
videos.
Tattoo on Tatis, yes. Rafe would have been my trainer, though. He had me on a good regiment with the bag.
You have a little bit of fun with the bag. You play with it. You land combinations on the bag.
I was playing with the bag a lot. But, Rafe, do I have a case here in the jacking? Look, you actually, jacker of the year, might be Rafe Bartholomew from a few instant analysis pods.
Those things happen at, like, 3 a.m. on the East Coast, man. It's hard to keep up with those.
Rafe, I mean, can you settle this debate here?
Of what?
There isn't a debate. That's what he's saying.
Look, I didn't jack, okay?
Well, you definitely jacked.
We had a gentleman's agreement, all right?
At least reschedule then.
Yes.
All right. Just give me a chance in 2020 to get in shape because everybody knows I'm fighting at weight category 229 right now. Not looking good. Raskin in my DMs questioning my fatness. I saw that, Rask, okay? Okay, I saw that. Happy Hanukkah to Eric Raskin and his family, Rafe, okay?
Today is the first day.
Yes, thank you.
Second day, isn't it?
Second. At least somebody got the days right, Rafe. Thank you, okay?
PC, we're going to get you to the point where that seersucker jacket you wear is not too tight.
Yeah, right? I have a very tight jacket. I have a fight with a tight jacket, Rafe, okay? Wow. Rafe, do you want to ask Brandon any questions? He just moved to Connecticut, I mean.
Are you renting a room from Brian Campbell?
I am not, thank God. I do not need to be in that house. I've been to his house already. I saw his animals that run wild and run roughshod that over him
true.
And his wife.
That's true.
That's entertainment enough, but no.
The Campbell twins, the two boys you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about literal animals.
Yes, a few of them have a stick, too. All right. we'll see if that fight plays out, Brandon, in 2020. But, you know, if not. Right.
I can't wait to be back here in 2021 and you jacked again.
I will not jack, okay?
Do we need to make a formal contract for this at some point?
Can you draw up the papers? Can you draw up the papers, please?
I'd sign it in blood, Rafe. The fluid of your choice.
I would be fine with ink, to tell you the truth.
The parameters would be, look, I'm going to need a training camp. Well, actually, I'm going to need a pre-training camp before the training camp. Basically, I got to get out of this winter depression. I got to lose my keg, and then I'm ready. Okay?
That's a tall order. You need like three contracts.
No. I mean, if you were Shannon Briggs, Rafe, would you have any, advice for me in terms of getting back into this game?
I think you're going to need about 3-4 more of them pies, champ, before you get in the ring with that man on your left.
You need like 5 or 10 more of those pies.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right. If you want more Brandon Wise in your life, please check out our year-end MMA State of Combat podcast where skinhead white guys talk about other skinhead white guys.
Rafe, put them in a bag for me, please. Thank you.
Rafe, where we were at there was looking at the year as a whole, looking inside the hole of that year.
The whole year.
It was the year of Dwyer in many ways, at least for this show, certainly. Played a big part in our lives. The streaming wars dominated. The heavyweights were somewhat back. The welterweights, 147, played a big subhead in this year. Anything else besides, I mean, the WBSS had a year. They had a stick on them.
The WBSS had a great year. I hope it is not the last year because it has produced great, great results, right, Brian? In terms of the fights we've seen in the ring. We know that it hasn't been the best organized, but for how difficult it is to pull off these tournaments, the fact that they generally end within a year or 13 months, that's been great. And the only one that's still lingering is the second cruiserweight season, which is postponed because of all the mess that happened in Latvia. Thank you, adolescent Robert Byrd. What can you do? I think overall it's a success. I'm also afraid that it won't be around because it just may not have the money or the backing. And you got the great Lube DiBella out here just crapping on it left and right to the press whenever he can about the lack of exposure it provides. But, you know, it gave pretty good exposure to Alexander Usyk. It gave pretty good exposure to Naoya Inoue. Both those guys broke out as real pound-for-pound stars, and they're from outside the States. And if that means that the tournament goes on looking for foreign fighters, talent in smaller weight classes, I can live with that. But please don't go away. I need you, WBSS.
It was also a great year for shoulder content, Rafe. Some of these platforms in which I
hope that doesn't go away. I love face to face. I love me some Brian Campbell in between two fighters.
Yeah, that may be the end. Nothing great ever lasts forever, Rafe. Okay, nothing. You know, sometimes you're just left with the holding the bag, right? Sometimes you're just left with it in your hands, right?
He's standing in front of the net with about 8 inches of his shaft in his hand.
That happens. All right, we got a lot to recap. I mean, good Lord, it was Jeff Horn fight week. I mean, Jeff Horn was a real man. We're going to get into that. Chavez, Jax, all that good stuff. We're going to do so after a word from our friends and sponsors. Yeah, all right. Dig it.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
And we're back. 2019 year in review to come. We're going to look ahead to the Gervonta Davis return on Showtime this weekend. But Rafe Boogs, there's really three headlines we need to serve up and break down in terms of the weekend recap. And it wasn't just the weekend, because last Wednesday morning, it didn't go down in Bendigo, but the rematch did happen down under. Shout out to Aussie Boxing. Them Sloppy Joes continually give us stuff to talk about. It was a down under Super Bowl all over again. Jeff Horn running it back at middleweight against our favorite stripper, Michael Zarafa. His family, his team told him, no, Jeffrey. Yeah, right, Jeffrey. Don't do it. But as we learned once again, the guy has balls, Rafe. He fights like a tough gang member. Jeff Horn rallies back from a vicious cut. Doctor about to stop it. Scores two Corrales Castillo looking, you better effing get inside on him type knockdowns, and scores a majority decision win. Holy cow, Rafe!
Who saw that coming? I totally believed that Michael Zarafa was going to put that man away, just like he said he would, just like he said at that great press conference where he's like, I'm going to end your effing career, mate. And Jeff Horn, sitting there all meek and Jeff Horn-like, says, no response. I will respond with my fists in the ring. But he does. He fights like a tough gang member, Brian. It was insane. And the man is, he's he gets new life, right? They talk, he saved a big money junior welterweight fight with Tim Zhu next year in Australia. And just, but I guess not to get too far ahead of myself, that ninth round, Brian, was, I think that's the, we can talk about it later, but that feels like a round of the year to me.
Like
that,
the best
that was
round
just
I've ever seen since Scotty Ward won. I mean, good Lord, that seriously, jokes aside, and I know that we give extra play to Jeff Horn in these type of situations because we love it. We love us some on the chin written by Alex McClintock. Hey, pick it up for the holidays, all right? You know, get the e-reader version, whatever you have to do. This is a legitimate round of the year, round of the day. I mean, this end of this fight was freaking insanity. And for Jeff to gut this out, Keith Thurman wasn't wrong, okay? When he screamed stuff at the world, okay? And it, Brian Campbell took a while to find it, but he wasn't wrong.
Jeff Horn was a real man. Yeah. He said, Manny Pacquiao, you don't got nothing.
This dude has legitimate toughness, Rafe. I mean, the guy's got balls. It's insane. Rafe, if you told me right now, what is Jeff Horn, 32, 33, something like that?
Sounds right, yeah.
He's probably going to fight Canelo. Like, you know what the biggest failure of 2019 was in the streaming wars? When, good God, Ryota Murata, whatever, Murata fought this weekend. I see Dan Canobio tweeting that he's up at 4 a.m. to watch it on the Plus. The Plus is giving us MTK Global until it's bleeding out of our eardrums, and you can't give us Horns or Rafa too? So if you can't Plus, I got the Zone on line one, because we may end up seeing Canelo and Jeff Horn one day, because the dude just lingers. And when you have a nation behind you, you can get in big fights.
That would be hilarious. I don't know if I think that's appropriate. I don't know if I'm really convinced now that Jeff Horn is a legitimate middleweight, but he did win a fight at 160. He proved himself. I think it's more likely he gets that shot at Ryota Murata that Michael Zarafa was looking at if he didn't have to go straight into the Horn rematch. But the man, damn, Jeff Horn just keeps coming through. He gets another, he's got nine lives, this guy. And of course we know how it goes in Australia. If you're resilient at all, he's going to be fighting 20 years from now at lightweight, yes, against like some up and coming fighter.
He'll be fighting Anthony Mundine's grandson at heavyweight soon, eventually. Wow. 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 Everyone's got their favorite fighter, Rafe. A lot of times, like, these guys just attach to us. We don't think they're our favorites, yet every time they fight or every time we get a chance to talk about them, Rafe, I think we love us some Jeff Horn. It's just what it is. It's just, it's weird, but, like, you can't judge a guy. Some people you just attract to.
I'm a big fan of Charlie Zelenoff. He's like 350-0 or whatever.
Charlie Z, bro.
He can actually fight. For a guy who don't practice really boxing or whatever.
Well, he's able to take Deontay's punches.
He had a draw with Deontay Wilder. And he beat up Floyd Mayweather Sr.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And who else? He's challenged me out many times, and I'm not brave enough to challenge him. And who else? And everybody else as well.
Rafe, that was Tyson Fury talking about his fighter crush on Charlie Zelenoff, one of the ballsiest boxing challengers out there today, open weight division. I grew up a Litzau fan in boxing, Jason Litzau, and Jeff Horn is just a thing that it's like you know what? There's the tradition in the men of my family, our big toe on our right foot, it's just disgusting. There's like fungus, like I'd stub it all the time. It's changed colors a few times. We call it the pipa toe in my family because pipa, grandpa, had a really bad pipa toe, or it was disgusting. Jeff Horn is my pipa toe, Rafe. It's like it's gross and he attaches to me, but I can't get enough of him. He's become a part of me. I need him to get sent to hell by Canelo. This is how it has to end, Rafe.
If it ends that way, you just got to tip your hat to Jeff Horn for talking his way into that. Because that's the other great thing Jeff Horn does. After he wins a fight, he calls out every legend in the sport, past and present, all the way back to Harry Greb. He does not care.
Did he call He'll out fight. Anybody now? Did he call who
he called? He didn't. I didn't hear. Well, we didn't see this fight, so we didn't get to see, or we saw some highlights and someone posted that ninth round, but it's hard to catch that whole fight live. Well, we couldn't catch it live. Hard to even catch the replays. I haven't yet seen what the comments were after the fight, but even if he didn't, he's got enough of a track record. I guarantee you, he will be calling out Canelo, Floyd, Manny, any big name he can, saying, well, I think I've earned a shot.
I love anybody that'll call it Canelo, you know?
Three special words. Bring me Canelo.
All right. Dan, you know, you remember what Danny said about Canelo, right?
He thinks he could stop him, right?
Yeah, I'll stop Canelo. That's what I'll do. I'll stop Chavez Jr.
I'd stop Canelo. I'm not Canelo.
I'd make Chavez Jr. run from the ring. So, hey, big win for Horn, big win for Australia, Rafe. These folk heroes down there, that's what these men do. They give their lives for us. I love me some Jeff Horn. Speaking of Chavez Jr., Friday night, DAZN, fight got relocated to Phoenix. And Danny Jacobs, where do we start here? This was such a Chavez Jr. fight because, of course, he misses weight by almost 5 pounds. Of course, he's like, don't worry, I'll fight you at 173 where I'm the lineal champion. And, you know, he gives up $1 million of his $3 million salary of his purse to Danny Jacobs for the fight to continue. Near, far, wherever you are, the fight will go on. Sorry, Gabe Rosado. I got to get that sound of Gabe Rosado going nose-to-nose with Danny Jacobs, by the way. And then it's just a pure car wreck. Chavez comes in with dyed blonde hair with a blue patch on top. Like, the last person I saw that, Rafe, was, like, addicted to E. Like, I mean, what's going on here? And then he, you know, he's jacked. I mean, he's jacked. I mean, please, somebody check that blood test. And then after the first round, it's just like, oh, you know, at first it was like, damn, he's two weight classes bigger than Danny. And then Danny used that stick and lit him up, and then the fight's over after round five in a typical Chavez exit. Trash in the ring. He says his nose, she said his hand is broke. Freddie said the nose is broke. Now there's weird hospital pictures of father and son. Senior's mad. Rafe, what the hell do we do with this circus?
Nothing. I mean, why? Those who watched enjoyed, make fun of it, have your laughs, and move on. It means nothing. It meant nothing going in. We didn't learn anything about what level Danny Jacobs is going to be or anything more. I mean, we expect him to be good because he's a very big and very good middleweight. So it makes sense that he could be a problem for a lot of the top fighters at super middleweight. But he didn't fight at super middleweight on Friday night, and he didn't fight a super middleweight on Friday night, and he didn't fight much of a professional boxer at all, whether you want to qualify that in terms of professionalism, making weight, not taking performance enhancing drugs and running away from VADA testers all the time. The entire Chavez experience and circus, it all came to a funny but ugly head on Friday night. And
that's how men deal. That's how men roll. And ain't a man.
I'm sorry, Rafe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. John
Fury nailed it.
Do you take anything away from this?
He's got to stop. So this thing of, I go away for a year and a half, I come back, I act like I'm serious, and he got into really good shape. I'm sure we all question how at this point, but like this looked like the Fonfara fight. Like, crap, I realized I'm in a fight here, so I'm just going to go. And look, people are ripping me on Twitter because I basically tweeted out, look, like, he's a disgrace to boxing. So, like, it's got to stop. Let's just end the charade. And people are like, oh, tough guy, you ever put... It's not about me being a tough guy. Have I ever boxed? This guy ducked out on a drug test. They moved it states. He comes in insanely unprofessionally overweight. And as soon as the fight gets heated up a bit, he just walks away. Like, he shouldn't be in there. It's not about who's tough. Am I tough that I can make this comment? Who cares who I am? I get paid professionally to make those comments. It's about that guy shouldn't have been in there. And then I got insiders hitting me up going, we're talking about like a guy's whose personal life is out of control. He should not have been in that ring. He's got personal issues that need cleaning up. It's criminal that he was in that ring, that the promoters, took that chance and put him out there to make that money player. It just felt gross and sad, Rafe. It wasn't fun and comical anymore. It was gross and sad. And there is a level of fun and comical in boxing, even when it's a little bit sad, because there's just so much ridiculousness in this sport, and some of that we cling to and we love. But, like, he's going to get hurt. And, this whole charade of, like, I'll pay my way to set the stakes so that I can keep fighting smaller guys. Like, hey, Brian Vera, come up 3 weight classes, and then I'm going to miss weight on top of it and try to lean on you the whole fight to prove to you that I'm the man. Like, stop that crap. Any real fighter is going to knock him out, Rafe. He punted against Canelo for money. Stop.
Sure. I have no problem with that. I didn't ask to see Chavez Jr. back in the ring. He had fought all of one round against Evert Bravo since that Canelo performance in 2017 when we got to here. Golovkin, you are next, my friend. And it was just, yeah, but who... Nobody asked for this, really. It was a cash grab by the promoters. I guess it worked. They got a great crowd there in Phoenix, who were at first excited to see Chavez, then started throwing beer at him. Look, they if they didn't know something like this was going to happen, then they're stupid. They probably did know that something like this was going to happen.
I'm told they're not stupid,
but they didn't care because they figured they could get their money and walk away with it anyway. So that's the Chavez problem. There's the bigger, sort of more sport-wide problem for me is that the lengths that Eddie Hearn, Matchroom, DAZN, Danny Jacobs all went to enable someone who they pretty much knew was trying to get away with not being tested for this fight.
Yes.
That kind of precedent, if it spreads to actually competitive fighters who we know that performance enhancing drugs is an issue throughout boxing, not just for guys who are trying to get in shape at the last minute or something and haven't fought for 2 years. If that kind of stuff happens, that's really, really dangerous. And it's not something that's funny, and it shouldn't be something that you can venue shop your way from state to state to evade.
It felt a little bit like Danny Garcia and crew allowing Eric Morales to do that 2012 rematch when he failed for the tainted meat, and it's sort of like, oh, it's all right. We'll still fight him. Cause we know we're getting the payday and the close up and the opportunity to knock him cold. And it felt way grosser though. And it's like, I got to turn it back on Eddie Hearn. I know he says things like this, and he might be right.
boxing and ethics don't really always mix.
They don't. Boxing's about making money. He's about making money. He's as greasy as all of them. He just does it in such a well-put-together machine with the 6'7 in the waistcoat, in the snazzy talk. He makes me want to buy a used car from him that I can visually see has four flat tires. And he makes me hope that he'll hang out with me afterwards and have a beer, even though I know he never will, Rafe, okay? But still, this was criminal. It's like, so what? You made a G today, but you made it in a sleazy way, right?
Indeed.
And like that's just the way it is. And some things will never change in boxing, but, you know, I thought it was almost apropos that the crowd, which was like so pro Chavez and Phoenix, and rightfully so, right? Like they should be like that, and they were a great crowd, and then they turned nasty when Chavez took away from them what they paid for, a fight. They want to see him go out on his shield. They want to see him persevere. They want to see him be a Chavez. When that was taken away from them, even though I don't condone by any means the danger of just throwing crap, and the announcers got hit, and poor Danny Jacobs is trying to do the interview in there, and he's getting tattooed by things, it was almost fair and apropos for the people that put on that fight. And if you're going to link Danny Jacobs in that category of enabling him, and I think you're right, if Dan Jacobs agrees to take the money when Chavez comes in 5 pounds over, it's like you're also enabling him. I'm not saying you had to just go fight Gabe Rosado, but it's just gross, Rafe. So sometimes I'm all in on the slop, not this time.
Yeah, well, it's just disturbing that, look, Danny Jacobs deserves to make a good living. And shoot, he's made a ton of money this year, and great for him, right? Danny Jacobs, you're the boy. But the idea that you have all of these signs pointing to your opponent being dirty in some very serious ways, right? Running away from drug testers, regardless of whatever legal maneuvers and argument you have to not have been tested, is a huge red flag. And for the fighter with a great reputation that is in there with that guy, Danny Jacobs in this case, it just looks bad for him to be like, well, I don't care what he's on. Well, what does that mean? Why don't you care? Shouldn't you care? Shouldn't everyone care? It's like, yeah, well, I don't care if he's cheating. I can cheat too. Now, I'm not saying anybody else did, but it's just that is the message it sends. And it's a bad message. And to risk that sort of thing, to have that kind of message for this fight, for this guy, do you think I care what that guy who came in at that weight, who said those things? Do you think I care what that guy says about me? No. I don't.
This is not cool. This is not what the public and the market audience want to see.
Bad look by Eddie Hearn and company. Bad look indeed. It gave us comedy. Then it got sad. And but you know what'll happen, Rafe? I'll take 9 months off. Same thing again. All right. Hey, Saturday night, PBC on Fox. They did the business, junior middleweight title rematch, and it was Jermell Charlo regaining his WBC title. Four knockdowns overall. Sorry, three overall. Two in round 11. Finally, Harrison stopped against the ropes by referee Jack Reese. Rafe, fun ass fight. Holy crap, for as much as that first fight was slow and tactical, and I thought Jermell Charlo's lack of activity allowed a smart and tough fighter like Tony Harrison to linger and have a chance at stealing a decision, this was the opposite of that, because Jermell Charlo came out early and tried to make it a war, was wild, was like, I'm taking my title back, no judges, love that. Then it kind of turned into a tactical war. And then I thought he was losing the fight by a wide margin, and he kind of needed that knockout. So there's a lot to talk about here, but number one, you talk about a late addition. I don't think it's top five fight of the year, but it's a late addition to the conversation. It was fun. Fun-ass fight, bro.
Fun, great action, great. I mean, you talk about these guys, especially when they fight this way, are a fantastic contrast and mix of styles, because you have Charlo is a very good boxer, but Tony Harrison, for the first six rounds of any fight, might be a pound for pound best kind of boxer on the planet. I mean, he is super good.
Yo, how good's his counter jab? It's so accurate, right?
so accurate. The timing is impeccable. Disrupts the guy he's going in against. We saw in this one, he used it in a different way, not just fighting off he wasn't really fighting. He wasn't moving a ton in the first fight, but he was off the back foot and kind of turning and pivoting and resetting the action. Here, he was walking Charlo down in those rounds 3 to 6 and using the jab the whole time and then getting in close and out fighting Charlo inside and really just really doing beautiful work. And to me, it was such a fun, really exciting fight. I come away feeling so bummed out for Tony Harrison, because he's now in my list of like the top fatal flaw guys in the sport, because with his personality, his sense of humor, his ability to talk and be quick on his feet, with his talent, with his boxing ability. That guy he has everything to be a star.
He has a charisma too. I remember interviewing him on that initial Friday Night Fights level rise that he had, and he was Kronk to the gills, and it was like, damn, this guy might be it. He can talk and he can punch, and then he showed his vulnerability. Yeah, he rebounded from those two knockout defeats to really get back into becoming an elite fighter, and he still is, Rafe. But yeah, he's flawed. Still is.
But he's got that one thing. He's going to it doesn't totally run out of gas, but he weakens down the stretches of fights, right? Rounds 9 through 12. And he's very susceptible to being knocked out. He doesn't have the greatest, not Amir Khan chin territory, but it's vulnerable. And the defense that carries him through the first 8 rounds of a fight all of a sudden falls apart. And then it all unravels so fast. And it's so sad because you're like, oh, it's like it's watching the tragic hero whose one fatal flaw is always going to come back and force his downfall before the end of the play or the book.
Like that handsome man Linares.
It's Shakespeare. Yeah. It's Greek tragedy, Brian.
He's a Detroit Linares. Yes, yes, he is. I got to get some sound. You didn't listen to the interview that I did with him on this podcast a couple weeks back, right?
I watched PBC face to face.
No. I asked him about like, what is it about being from Detroit? You know, what is it, man? And he went on a rant that was epic about grimy chicks, about, oh man, you got to hear it for yourself. I'll play it on the show for you soon. Wow. Just one Detroit guy with a backbone, but vulnerable, being talked about by another new Detroit guy. That's somewhat vulnerable due to your weakness to that liquid crack, Rafe. But we got a DM slide this week from Juan at Someone Else. Shout out to that name, right? Shout out to that handle, all right? He says, amazing battle, guys, last night between Charlo and Harrison. Just curious, if you scored it, what did you have it before the final round? Rafe, were you scoring at home?
I was scoring at home. I did the thing where I was shading the closer rounds toward the man I expected to be the house fighter, who was Jermell Charlo, and did get even more rounds shaded to him by the actual judges. I had it 6-4 for Tony Harrison going into that 11th round. And of course, the knockdown in round 2. So I guess he would have been up 1 point on my card. But I saw that a lot of people online had 7-3, some even 8-2, which seems like a lot. I mean, they were close rounds in that. It was not I thought Tony Harrison was winning, but
yeah, dude, I had him up. So the scores that we saw that came out were, of course, before the knockdowns. They were the scores at the time of the stoppage, and they were 1 for Harrison close, 2 for Charlo close. I went back and watched that after knowing the result, but you know, and scored it closely and had it 7-3 Harrison. And I thought, okay, I really would only give back one round where I thought was more of a coin flip. I thought Harrison was soundly outboxing him. Harrison recovered so nicely from Charlo forcing him into a brawl early, stood his ground, and then turned it into his kind of fight and mastered the infighting. In fact, my scorecard through most of the fight mirrored that great ringside unofficial judge they have. Let's give him a shout-out, by the way.
Marcos Viejas has done a spectacular job. The journalist.
The journalist was succinct on his breakdowns, and my score pretty much mirrored his. Rafe, Harrison turned Charlo into the worst version of himself, which is what, Brian Campbell? It's the guy who doesn't throw enough punches, who doesn't jab, who's so in love with his power that he wastes rounds trying to land the perfect counter shot. And when it doesn't come, you get these situations where people are like, man, I know that I've seen a few flashy knockouts from him. I know that he says certain things about himself and his ability. Speaking of Marcos.
Yeah, you know him the best.
But in really close fights, he's not the best. Rafe, this was a regression from Charlo for the majority of this fight, and then he turned it on and did exactly what he had to do when it mattered most. So I say shout out to Derek James, who started to kind of get in his ear and be like, you know, you got to go after it. But Harrison's that, he's the perfect kryptonite. If you ain't like, if you're not sure whether you a lion or a snake, Rafe, because if you ain't a lion, he gonna dog you, right? And he had the perfect counterboxing antidote. I'm nervous that Jermell Charlo, once he consistently fights the best, the J-Rocks, the Swift Herds, that he's not the real. That he never really was pound for pound level. That some journalists, not Marcos Viejas, jumped the gun on putting him in their top 10. And that if you can box, you can disarm that man.
Yes, I think that he is not the best pure boxer in his division. I think the best pure boxer in that division probably is Tony Harrison. However, he can't put together a full 12-round performance against elite competition 3 out of 4 times in his career, we've seen, which is a bummer, man. I love me some Tony Harrison. But Jermell Charlo, see, I think that against some of the other top fighters in the division, whether it's somebody like Jarrett Hurd or whether it's even against J-Rock, who is a really, really smart, well-schooled boxer puncher, a little bit in the style of who can mimic some of the things that Tony Harrison did to really outbox Jermell Charlo throughout the majority of the rounds they fought against each other in 2 fights, right? But I think that Charlo's power, his athleticism, his aggression, and I think that Harrison is that good of a boxer that he can make other good boxers look pedestrian in ways that I don't see Hurd necessarily doing at all. And I don't think even maybe J-Rock will be able to show the same contrast in skill level that Tony Harrison was able to. Now, I think J-Rock can do some other things to make that a very interesting fight and maybe prove that he is the man at 154. But that's the thing with Charlo. Even if he's not perfect or he's got some of these flaws, there are things that a really great boxer can do to give him trouble. The man clearly has a chin because Tony Harrison has knocked out a lot of guys and hurt a lot of guys. And this, he never really, the body shots seem to bother Charlo in say rounds 3, 4, 5, but Charlo's just never was badly hurt at all and kept coming and stayed with it and was powerful and fast and explosive to the end of the fight when he finally got a chance to go for that knockout. And he can do things just because I think he is a more explosive athlete than these other really strong athletes in the division. And he can come up with that shot out of nowhere that they don't see or that shakes them up with that makes up for some of the, whether it's because he's fighting reckless and wild and winging those punches or because he's just against a guy who's a little bit sharper than him. He can make up for that. So I wouldn't necessarily count him out. The thing that would be so interesting if he fights. So and Hurd ain't no, you know, Floyd Mayweather, man. He's big Margarito, right? I mean, he's going to come in
black
and
Margarito.
And be what's honest, that?
He's black Margarito.
Look, I don't see color, Brian. What are you talking
no,
about?
So who told me that? Who called him that to me? Somebody.
That's a good point. Somebody. It was a great quote.
Yeah, somebody. I talked to a trainer who called him that. And then I relayed that back to Hurd, and he was like, yeah, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Hurd, That would make that fight really exciting, because Hearn would be the guy to just trust his chin to try and walk through Charlo. And I think that Charlo, who can box, I mean, he would outbox Jared Hearn. J-Rock, that's a lot more interesting.
Well, could he outbox? Wait, Rafe, yes. He should be outboxing more dudes. And there was a point in his career where we labeled Jermell the boxer of the Charlo twins. And you remember there were times where we thought, well, he's a little bit too boring. He doesn't throw enough power punches. He's boxing too much. My problem now is, if he was as reckless on the regular that he was in the first three rounds against Harrison, that's a flawed way of trying, but at least he's trying to get people out of there. I think it's worse when he tries to be sniper and doesn't throw any punches at all. I thought Joe Goosen was nailing it on the commentary. By the way, I thought Fox had a rough night at the office all around on the commentary. But when Charlo's using his jab to set up these punches, man, he's got a much, 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 much better chance. I don't like this sleeping lion version who's just waiting to growl. Like, if you got a big, let me search it, right? Put your thing down, flip it, and reverse it, right? If you all from a different Ran Yang Hong, but you got to set that up with the jab.
I don't know. Singing is Missy Elliott garbage to me, man. I was never into Missy. Yeah, it's right. If a more consistent, steady effort, a more classic, you know, breakdown opponent style, I think I favor that. In this fight, I favor the Russian. Charlo's pretty effective with what he's doing, even if there are some moments where he gets out boxes and loses the fight. If we see down the line Julian Williams against Jermell Charlo, which Steven Edwards, the bread man, J-Rock's trainer, has said a couple times on the Showtime Championship Boxing podcast, that fight is already signed. If J-Rock can get through Jason Rosario on January 11th?
18th, maybe?
18th. So next month, if he can get through that, then they say that unification is signed. If that fight happens, the interesting thing that I would take there is we saw the job that J-Rock did on Hearn on the inside. If J-Rock can get inside on Charlo, I think he can outfight him maybe a lot like we saw Tony Harrison do for three or four rounds on Saturday night, and he can sustain that effort.
You know, if Jarrett Hearn can rebuild himself, that's still such a fun-ass fight, because he'll be in that kitchen all night on Jermell, and it'll be up to Jermell. That's probably the only fight where Jermell probably wants to do that sniper role and try to pick him off coming in.
You know, the other, obviously, Jermall and Jermell Charlo are different. They are different fighters. They're two people. They're also identical twins. And to the people, I understand that Tony Harrison has exposed some flaws in Jermell Charlo over the past couple of fights. But I saw sort of a growing consensus in the Twitter commentary about a possible Julian Williams Charlo fight, Jermell Charlo fight. And it all seemed to favor Julian Williams because he's coming off this great win, and we sort of are newly appreciative of his gifts in the ring, and that's great. He deserves that. But at the same time, there's a sort of a common sense argument there being like, oh, hold up. That guy also lost to someone who shares the exact genetic makeup of Jermell Charlo, got knocked out. So, you know, Charlo, that Charlo power is real, even if it comes in an imperfect package.
Very true. Speaking of packages, yes, indeed. Hey, from that broadcast, we do have to talk about it. It's a big piece of news this week, is that Errol Spence did.
Oh, can
make...
Rafe? Can you indulge me in one fanciful thing, Brian?
Please, please.
I wrote about this on theathletic.com today.
Please dig that again, yes.
PB has to. They won't, but they have to make 154 pound tournament. They have seven of the top 10 guys at 154. All of the top six, according to the Transnational Boxing Rankings Board.
Never heard of
Hearn.
They kicked me out. Hearn. Do you know they kicked me out a few years ago for inactivity?
You were in TBRB?
For a hot second, they kicked me out for not responding enough. So, hey,
Hearn, Charlo, Erickson Lubin, Tony Harrison, Brian Castaño, Arislandi Lara, J-Rock. There you go.
Terrell Gauthier. Terrell Gauthier.
Fine. Throw in
throw in any one last guy to make it an eight-man field, basically steal the idea of the WBSS, run it all on PBC on Fox, make it, set it up so that you're most likely to get semifinals of Herd J-Rock 2 and Harrison Charlo 3, pay-per-view the finals. Yo, turn it into a real event. I know people will say, well, they're already making a lot of these fights. You're basically getting that. No, why would you have set them as standalone events and not maximize the marketing, the excitement, the potential of a tournament? Make that tournament, player.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, they don't do that type of stuff. They do what they want, okay?
Amateurs. Fools. Idiots.
All right, Dwyer, that's too far. All right? That's too far.
When they try to insult you. Well, look, what's that
it is. But I mean, we're kind of getting
also, what if they go, I'm going to get really silly on you here, brother.
Well, you sound like you're underwater, Rafe. Did you enter the Lincoln Tunnel? Where are you? What's going
on
here?
No, I don't know what's going on. If we went to the, instead of Terrell Gaucher or Wale Omotoso in that eighth spot, Jeff Horn.
Stop. Yeah, stop that.
He wants to fight at 154. He's not comfortable at 160. He's not sleeping right. He's not comfortable. They don't make them beds right, Brian.
By the way, I was at that press conference with Harrison and Charlo, and I didn't even hear any of that. I didn't even know what you're talking about. And then I clicked on that link, and I was like, damn, that's a – and I can't put it on the soundboard because there's some F-words in it. But Charlo went after that Airbnb lifestyle. He went at it, Rafe.
You can't train where you're comfortable in Detroit. You got to go down to St. Pete. They don't make them beds right, Brian.
That's what I'm talking about. So, Rafe, let's move on here and get into Errol Spence Jr. Right. First time he spoke publicly, interview ringside with Brian Kenny, the guy that used to go at Floyd back in the day, and he brought it. Spence said, first, I'll be back May of 2020. I don't want no tune-ups. I want the big names. I want the Manny Pacquiao's, the Danny Garcia's, which that's great. Then when asked a couple more times, I was curious why Brian Kenny kept going back to the well on the question that was already answered, but he kept going back to it, and then suddenly he's like, well, maybe summertime, or maybe sometime in 2020. Whatever it is, it's great, obviously, to hear that he's back. I was happy that Brian Kenny didn't look past that there's a DUI involved in those elements. He did go to the well a lot on, are you sure you're healthy enough to spar? Are you okay? In the end, we know that Errol's got new teeth. Yeah, Errol's
got his teeth like 16 times.
Errol's got new teeth. We know that. You could still see the scarring and bruising above his eye. And he's bloated. And he's probably rightfully so bloated because we're so used to seeing him in and around training camp. And now he's, you know, going through some hard times and recovering. I'm sure there's a deep mental recovery in that, you know, we're not going to give him enough credit for having to endure, regardless of the fact that this was not a good scene, drinking and driving, all that. What was your biggest takeaway from this? And also, if you don't bring it up, I want to hear your take on the controversy of the drive safely quote from Brian Kenny.
Brian Kenny, we know, is an antagonistic personality on a broadcast, and that's his trademark. He does it well. He's appropriate. He's polite, but he goes after it. He gets into little arguments with everyone. He was getting into arguments during the main event with Joe Goosen and Lennox Lewis over what was happening in the ring. He was arguing with Marcos Villegas' scorecards at points. He was arguing over whether Charlo should have celebrated when he thought the fight was called off at one point. And it
wasn't.
Oh, my
God, he was harping on that. He thought Bradley beat Pacquiao the first time, Rafe. He killed win in Major
and
League
in
Baseball.
Some scenarios, that is exactly what you want from your broadcaster. You want, for example, Friday night fights, confronting Floyd Mayweather, not backing up an inch, that kind of pugnacious attitude,
exactly,
and aggression. That is his trademark.
Turn off your station.
I agree. That's just who he is as a television personality. Perhaps probably in real life too, and he does it in his baseball work too, where he's been sort of outsmarting people who are against statistics in baseball for like a decade. You know, that's what Brian Kenny does. And we saw it a little bit. I think we got some of the good and bad of it on Saturday night in his interview with Errol Spence, because on one hand, I think that it helped PBC and Errol Spence a lot that it happened to be Brian Kenny and not a more favorable kind of in-house character doing this interview.
Give me a name of a potential.
Literally anyone else who works there, Jordan Plant, Brian Campbell.
I think Jordan
Plant probably would have given him the soft touch.
Are you saying that she already what are you saying? Stop it. Stop that crap. Stop.
I'm saying it wouldn't have been as hard hitting of an interview. And I think that the hard hitting interview, while it did turn off some viewers because they thought, man, this guy's been through, Errol Spence has been through a lot. Why does he have to come on and have Brian Kenny give him the third degree? I think that it actually could have helped PBC and Errol Spence in a way, because if it had been someone who was coming with a much more softball approach, it might have looked much worse. It might have looked like a welcome back ceremony, like a big party, like, wow, great, Errol, we're so happy. And that's the wrong tone to send after what Errol Spence did, the reality of what Errol Spence did, which was get drunk, get behind the wheel of a Ferrari, crash it in an extremely dangerous fashion, and is not only lucky to have survived and come out of it so healthy himself, which we're all grateful for, but we're even more grateful that his actions didn't hurt or kill anyone else, which is something that happens every day in this country. So it would have been
murder. Error's too big, too strong.
It would have been even worse if the interview had come off like some sort of, oh, this is all, oh, yay, welcome back, we're so happy. If it had come off triumphant, you don't want that tone.
All right, I agree. I like that Brian Kenny was a little bit of a dick, that he was hard-hitting. It brings back the days of a Larry Merchant, of what Jim Gray still does from time to time on Showtime. I want that spot to be so much more hard-hitting than it normally is. And it's weird because I don't dislike the work of what's her name on the Fox in-ring interviews? Heidi Andrell.
Andrell.
By the way, Heidi Andrell in person is a joy. Amazing person. Beautiful. Amazing. Talented. All that. Loved her work in UFC. She was more hard-hitting in the post-fight interviews than she normally is, and people were kind of clowning on it. Did you hear Joe Goosen, like, groan when she was talking to Tony Harrison? He's like, man, I got a lot to work on and go back. I made mistakes. She's like, what? Like what? Like what? And Goosen had the hot mic, and he was like, oh, come on. Oh, God. Come on. I kind of agree with that, but
that woman, Josh, yeah. Brian.
But I like that it was hard-hitting. But then he said drive safely. And I think he was trying to be more polite than smart polite, given the situation. But a lot of people had issues. Ray Flores going hard in the paint on Twitter over it. PBC on PBC crime there, although, to be honest,
that's just a man who knows where his bread is buttered, all right? A lot of the most vocal
critics,
people who took offense to this, are people who want to be very clear in messaging whose side they're on.
I'm on all sides, Rafe. I cash all checks, okay? But and then Brian Kenny as well, by the way, who's a DAZN announcer who's filling in while everybody's doing...
Some might call you the Yousaf Mack of boxing commentators.
All right. Yeah. Wow. Wow, Rafe. Wow.
It is hot.
Yes.
Wow, it is good.
Yeah,
going back. You're excited.
No. Not really. When Brian Kenny said, you know, strap season, good luck to you. Buckle up, bro. It's borderline. It's I'm okay with it because the severity of the situation. Like we can't gloss this up, and I'm glad that they didn't. Like you said, I'm glad it wasn't looked past, and thank God. And by the way, thank God. First of all, yes, thank God, but not looked past that there wasn't a crime committed here and all that.
Well, there was a crime committed, but just a much lesser crime.
But at the same time, it was a little insensitive, Rafe.
Yeah, no. Look, I think that comes with the Brian Kenny experience.
You're right.
He comes off dickish sometimes.
Yeah, Brian has a stick. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Rafe, did you see, though, the Snapchat video that Errol Spence put out? There's a little controversy coming off this.
No, I didn't. I saw his tweet sort of joking that, like, Brian Kenny's like the DA.
Okay, that was funny. That was funny, okay?
See, I think it's funny, but I also think it's not a great look, just in that Errol Spence shouldn't really be discussing any of that because he's in the middle of legal proceedings. And anything he – like, you know, the Miranda rights, anything you say can and will be used against you. So I thought it was totally appropriate when he said, look, I can't really talk about this because it's in the courts right now. But if you're saying that in the interview, then you shouldn't come out on Twitter a few hours later and crack a joke about, man, he was interviewing me like the cops.
Well, do you think he should go on Snapchat, post a video in his live Snapchat feed of his daughter in bumper cars at a amusement park and write, quote, girl, you drive like your daddy, end quote, double crying emoji face?
Look,
I mean, come on. It's got to be strap season in the household and for all the Spences at this point. Come on, bro.
I hope she don't drink like her daddy.
No.
We are certainly not above making Rafe. Really the worst. The worst.
My goodness gracious. My gosh. That's inappropriate to say. That's assault, you guys.
Yeah, come on, Rafe. Seriously.
Maybe daddy uses marijuana.
Oh, so what? Daddy's got some pot coin that he wants to talk about? I mean, come on, Richard Dwyer. All right. Enough of that. Rafe, we got to roll on. Here's what we're going to do, okay? We got to be quick here. We got to get to the end of this show. Is there any news that we need to talk about before we get into a quick do you care?
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about what happened either just this morning. Let me school you. Let me update you, sir, on what you missed.
Don't bring up Kell Brook fighting the Bazooka DeLuca because I'm not in on that on February 8th.
Okay. These are the fights that went down this morning in Japan, man.
Oh, yeah.
Kenshiro, Randy Petelkorin, Kenshiro. This guy, I'm thinking about putting him in my top 10 pound for pound.
Oh,
just
great.
Murderous body shots. You need to get up on the amazing boy. Then a nine round war. Between Akira Yagashi and Maruti Mtalani. Mtalani won TKO. Yagashi was a last stand type performance. Just amazing. They threw like each close to 800 punches or something in just nine rounds. It was a blast. Brian.
What about else? Chocolatito? He was on that undercard. Did he win?
Sent the guy to hell in two rounds.
Ooh.
And
bang, try and stop him. Yeah.
Let me, and I just I don't know why I'm telling you this. I really should not tell you this, but I will. Mtalani, the South African flyweight or superfly, anyway, the who beat Yagashi, wore after the fight a cowboy hat as a tribute to Dwight Ritchie, the cowboy from Australia.
Wow.
What a touching moment. Right?
That is a touching moment. And that guy had plenty of business getting up from the body shot, and I really wish he did. Yeah. You know, I mean, look, we didn't talk enough about Zarafa fighting so quickly after I mean, Madonna put out an album pretty quick after she sent Guy Ritchie to hell. But, I mean, this is a much different situation, Rafe. Not funny. I didn't watch Murayuto Murata. I mean, come on. The corner man's tweeting about it. That's great. Hey, plus, get me Jeff Horn, okay? That's it. Okay. I'm not going to let you talk about that anymore, Rafe. You all right with that?
All right with that.
All right. Broner's got to pay $830,000 for sexual assault. That's in the news. You know, whatever. Okay.
Just another day living in the hood. Another day around the way.
All right. Do you care about this weekend, Rafe? It's time to find out. Okay. A little pre-New Year's weekend. The fight you need to care about is Saturday, Showtime, Atlanta, where Gervonta Davis is taking the show on the road. I got to give Showtime credit for this. They did not have a great 2019. We know that. But they've sort of identified the fighters and the brands that they're going to back and that they'll be consistent with. They've been doing Tank Davis since the beginning, Rafe, okay? And he's proving, you know, I was there when he fought in Baltimore last time. And it may not have been against an opponent we all wanted, but that was a traveling show. The people showed up. He's a star, Rafe. He is a star. He has built this, you know, we think of this sport as either old white guys or Hispanic fans. Yet, Gervonta's got this young, urban group of followers that are hitting the road, and he's on tour in Atlanta this weekend fighting for the WBA vacant regular lightweight title, moving up to 135 against Yuriorkis Gamboa. And I know the natural refrain of people is being like, man, when's he going to fight somebody? And I get that. And I think it's workful criticism. I think it's fine. I think moving up in lightweight will give him some more options. But I don't hate this fight. Yes, I'm Team Gamboa for life, Rafe. I don't care how old he is because he defies the age curve. He's got quick hands. Yes, he's chinny. Yes, he's probably going to get knocked out. But he's going to make it fun. And he couldn't be any hotter after sending the husk of Rocky Martinez to the basement floor of hell a few months back. I'm here for this piece of business, Rafe, and it has nothing to do with my ability to cash Showtime checks. I like this fight.
I don't blame you, Brian. I think this. I think that some of the criticism of this fight, of this matchup, is warranted. Look, the case against it, I'll make the case against it for you right now. Yuriorkis Gamboa was a great, maybe had chances of being a historical featherweight. One weight category, 126, not 135, where he's fighting now. He also had a rousing last stand type of performance. You don't remember when that was? What was that? 2014, 15? It came against Terrence Crawford.
It's Terrence Crawford's best win.
I don't know if I agree with that, but it was a really, really fun fight, and it was one where Gamboa summoned sort of that. He really was a last hurrah, like the last bit of true greatness I've seen in his career. That where the first, I thought he won the first four rounds against Crawford. That was something that Bud used to do more, where he would just really let a guy do whatever at the beginning of a fight before sending him to hell. Remember Delorme. But so I thought that Gamboa came out strong, gave Bud some problems, and then after Bud started taking over, Gamboa came back, landed that shot in the ninth round. The only time we've seen Bud Crawford badly hurt, and I would include whatever we saw, the knockdown, which I thought was more of a flash knockdown and wasn't even called a knockdown, against Mean Machine a couple weeks ago. But this, Brian, is I think it's a fantastic, so that's the case against it. And Gamboa hasn't been anything like that since. And he's always been the type of guy who gets knocked down a lot, recovers pretty well, but he's fighting. He's 37. He's well past his prime. He had that last hurrah effort. He's got some talent still, and I think that will make it interesting for a while. But it's just not to be fighting a guy many think could be competing against Vasily Lomachenko. That's not a logical step. That's the case against it. I do like it, though, because Gamboa's got balls, man. Remember we interviewed him in Vegas that one time?
Yeah, Gonzalez E. Gonzalez, yes.
Yeah, in New York, New York. And the guy, you know, he's got that Cuban self-confidence that I don't really care if I've lost. I don't care how old I am. I might be 75 years old. I'm still better than you ever were. I am superior to you. I come from a superior boxing culture, and that will carry out the day, and you will lose. Now, I don't think he's going to be right in this case, but he's probably very confident after that knockout against Rocky Martinez, Martinez seemed kind of washed, but hey, Gamboa looked good doing it.
By the way, this is a good undercard. Can I talk to you about it?
I don't know about that Badu Jack fight, but anyway, I think Gamboa is going to come with a lot of confidence. He's going to give it a shot, and it'll be very fun while it lasts. And look, if Gervonta Davis is not ready for this, if he's not taking it seriously, I wouldn't put it past Gamboa to make it really exciting, to make something crazy happen.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to find a path to victory for him, but unless Gervonta comes in on a real off night, and if he does, it could be a fun fight. Gamboa will let his hands go. Gamboa could get himself sent to hell early by letting his hands go, but he will, and he will have a speed advantage early. I don't care who you are. Gamboa finds a way to overwhelm you in the beginning of a fight. He's got that Amir Khan level of like, oh, crap, I forgot that he can do this, and then eventually gets sent to hell. But he's brave. He goes after it. It's going to be fun. I like the co-main event. Jean Pascal, fresh off that resurgent victory against Marcus Brown, stopping him for the WBA bootleg light heavyweight title. Going in there against Badou Jack, Rafe, talk me out of it.
Badou Jack is just not, I don't know.
They're both a little washy, Rafe. You can't lie here. I love me some Badou Jack, but he's starting to be on the other end of it.
He definitely, yeah, he's looked flat in a couple of performances now, and that's a problem. It's too bad because that's coming off of a year that might have been his best year in the sport where he looks great at the end of his run at 168. But, hey, he may have lost that step. Pascal is Pascal, right? He just never quite goes over the hill. He'll always be able to beat the Egyptian magicians and the random hockey players and apparently also Marcus Brown on the right night. This is just it could be more fun than I'm giving it credit for, but these guys don't matter. These guys don't matter in this division, right? They don't.
No, they do. They do. I mean, not on the extreme elite level because all the Ukrainians and Lithuanians do, but on the PBC side, it's a fun-ass fight. It's a fun-ass fight.
It's one of the – they're just like – they just keep recycling these
they
fighters.
They do,
it's
but
good
we haven't
for the
seen
fighters.
This
good,
one.
All right. Well, you know what? It's good for the fighters. Get that money, player.
I think it'll be a war. I think it'll be fun.
Could be. It could be slow because Jean Pascal doesn't always throw punches and Badou Jack doesn't always cut off the ring. It depends on how the styles mix on the night.
All right. Jose Uzkategui coming off the loss at Caleb Plant against Lionel Thompson, soon super middleweights. Do you care about that?
I like Uzkategui. I also love Lionel Thompson as a frequent commentator in those Mayweather Boxing Club videos.
Yes.
Of course, gave the interview and prediction of the year when he suggested that Danny Jacobs might have a resurgence of his back cancer during the middle of the Canelo fight and that it might play a role in the fight. That was just the left turn of the century. Also, another great thing about L-Train, I heard this on the Showtime Boxing podcast this morning, Raskin and Mulvaney, they said that, and apparently this came from the great, the Hall of Famer, Steve Farhood, who dug this up, who did this research, shout out to the Farheads, Lionel Thompson watches the Denzel Washington movie, The Equalizer, every night, period, of his life. Not before every fight, every night.
Okay.
That's great. I think that's magic. All right, what movie would you do that with, Brian?
Tommy Boy.
How are you going to not say Out for Justice?
Yeah, you know what? You're actually right. It would probably be more better.
You're really gonna do
no?
Bobby
it would have
like
to be
that.
It would have to be an action movie like that. Just a relentless, absurd action movie. Rafe, we got to fast forward here. We got to end your 2019 year end awards. I'm gonna stumble through some words. On this undercard though, the Egyptian magician's back. Ahmed El Bialy against Brian Vera. 10 rounds light heavyweights. Rafe, this is the crust of Brian Vera, who has given us many good fights as an opponent, but that was a long time ago, Rafe. I'm afraid to call up his box rec here.
He even had that storied career in the pit with BKV.
Yeah, he's 37. His record is 26-15, Rafe. Do you remember when Chavez Jr. made him come up a couple weight classes and he fought his ass off?
You mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast.
Now
Ryan,
he's
yes, I remember.
Willingly going up to that said weight class, Rafe. Seen him lose a lot. Saw him beat Sergey Zinsaruk that time on Friday Night Fights. I was there in person in Verona. Rafe, he has lost 4 in a row. I'm going to bet you never heard of the 4 guys that beat him.
Well, put me to the test. You're probably right.
Mike Gavronsky?
Nope.
Jazz Phillips? Phipps. Jazz Phipps. His record is 9-6-2. Jazz Phipps.
I'm going to say no on that one, too.
Cena Agbeko?
No, not Joseph Agbeko.
Marcus McDaniel.
0-4.
Yeah. He got stopped by Rocky Fielding 4 years ago. Oh, God. Oh, boy, Rafe.
I favor the Egyptian. I think the Egyptian is more to my liking.
Yeah, wow. I feel bad here. I almost want to, give my salary to Vera so he doesn't have to keep doing this.
Let's ace it, too. Rocky Fielding is not on the Mount Rushmore of great super middleweight champions.
That's very true.
Yeah, very true.
Rafe, we got a title fight in France on Saturday. Arsène Guilmerian versus Constantine Bejenaru. 12 rounds for the WBA cruiserweight title. That's your area, Rafe.
Good as you said Guilmerian, I was like, cruiserweight? Yeah, you know I care.
Okay, Saturday in Osaka, Japan, Shoa Shida versus Israel Gonzalez in a junior bantamweight eliminator.
I don't really care, and I think that some hipster guy is going to be accusing me of being a casual.
New Year's Eve in Tokyo, main event, Kazuto Ioka will defend his WBO junior bantamweight against Javier Cintron.
Oh, I gotta care about that guy. I know that's one of the names I gotta check off to keep my hipster card.
Kosei Tanaka versus Wulan Tolahesi for the WBO Fly title? No. No.
Another must watch.
Mio Yoshida will defend her WBO women's junior bantamweight against Li Ping Shi.
Stop that crap.
All right. I got jokes that would be bad. All right, Rafe. Oh, that's it. It's time to do the fun stuff, Rafe. Let's do year end. Are you ready? 2019 was interesting. It was a bit of a banger, Rafe. All right.
Bang. Sometimes, you know, you want to bang a little bit. We're not banging.
Let's talk about it.
Let's riff a bit on boxing. But
yes.
First, remember, the opinion you should follow should be your own. Just consider this video to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
Rafe, let's start at the top. Let's start at the top. Rafe, a legitimate award. The most important award, Rafe. Fighter of the Year in 2019 from the State of Combat Boxing Podcast.
You want me to tell you?
It was the kind of year where I think you had a lot of people with a case, but I don't think there was a lot with a very, very, very strong case. We just had the same debate in MMA, you know, the skinhead white guys. And I'm like, man, I can't remember a year where this many people had a strong-ass case for number one. I feel like this year in boxing, there was a lot of warning track power cases, a lot of solid-ass years. But how many great years did you see?
Yeah, no, that's correct, Brian. There is it's hard to choose a standout fighter. There are a lot of people who had great years, but they moved their careers along. Look, I'll throw out the obvious choice that I don't necessarily agree with.
Why don't you tell me your choice? That's what I'm interested in.
I don't know my choice, Brian.
All right, then I'll give you the 411 on this, all right? Big Red, bro. 2019,
that was the obvious choice.
Is Canelo Alvarez. He unified middleweight titles against a freaking game Danny Jacobs. A Danny Jacobs who I think left the fight inside the ring. Didn't leave himself in the ring. Had a chance to do more, should have done more. Yet, tough-ass boxing match. And then he moves up two weight classes and knocks out Sergey Kovalev and wins a light heavyweight title. He's the biggest star in the sport. Yeah, it's Canelo's year. In the argument, I think, comes from best from the welterweight division. Tell me if I'm wrong. I think your next best argument is either Errol Spence or Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, those are good. Look. Canelo, he held par. That's not how it goes. He made par. He shot par. He held serve. He did pretty much exactly what everyone thought he would do in both fights, which was win a competitive, narrow decision that I believe he deserved over Danny Jacobs. And then in the next fight, knock out Sergey Kovalev. In a fight that Kovalev had, we're not allowed to make excuses for Kovalev, but those excuses were real. We knew the issues about how much time he had to prepare for that fight were real before the fight and made every attempt to dismiss them. And then, of course, when he pointed to them, got mad at Kovalev. That stuff is real, and it's part of the win, and it tends to be how fighters who can stack the deck in their favor often get the deck stacked in their favor. In any case, he was great. He is great. He rose on my pound for pound list, but he did what I thought he would do, and he didn't do it in a manner any more spectacular than I thought he would do it. I guess that means I give Canelo a lot of credit for being a great fighter now, because he had a great year.
Very angry about this, very distraught, very down. Like, yeah, all right, I guess I'll give it to Canelo, whatever. I mean, Big Red sent Sergey Kovalev to hell, Rafe. Like,
yeah, he's only the second. Later Alvarez send him to hell?
I know, but he's a smaller guy moving up in weight, and his other win wasn't Beefy Smith. It was Danny Jacobs to unify titles. Like, he had a great year, great. Well, very good. It was a year of very good. But he was the greatest of the very goods this year. It's Big Red, Rafe, all right? He's big. All right, that's it.
Why not Manny then? Who, okay, the Broner fight, we expected that. But the performance against a game, Keith Thurman, who fought hard, who hurt Manny a couple times in that fight, landed crazy shots, and it was a memorable fight. It was a fight that people loved watching. It was the best performing pay-per-view of the year. You could say that now that Canelo is off pay-per-view, he's not carrying boxing in the way that he used to, that Manny has to do it for him. You're letting the 41-year-old man carry the sport for you, Big Red.
Well, Manny was 40 during this calendar year, and he had a great year. I ended up voting him third. I would not be angry, though, if someone made a strong case for Manny to win it. At 40, he was massively resurgent. He did his end, like you mentioned, on being a star. I mean, we rank traffic at CBS Sports. See which fights, which fighters bring us. You know, that's what we go after. We're traffic chasers. Manny versus Adrian Broner brought more traffic to CBS Sports than any other boxing or MMA fight this year. You wouldn't have guessed that, but it did. Maybe it was the perfect storm of one of those fights that's a pay-per-view, but people don't want to buy it, so they go searching in the live blog to see what's going on. I don't know, but biggest selling pay-per-view was against Thurman. And I think you can make a hipster argument that the best win of 2019 was Pacquiao over Thurman.
How is that even a hipster argument? There may be other contenders for that, but that is there's a strong case for that. I mean, I guess other things I would put up there would maybe better Biev over Vozdik.
Yes.
Grostik.
Yes, very, very good. Very good choice there as well. Spence has to be there. Moves up to the pay-per-view level. And I don't care that Mikey Garcia was moving up. Look, he's the undefeated pound-for-pound ranked guy. He was a champion at one division below, and Spence straight up blanked him. And then it wasn't the knockout we thought, because Porter fought over his head. I thought Spence took Porter a tiny bit too lightly, Rafe, but in a fight of the year contender, Spence was the clear winner. That's a great year. Two pay-per-views, unified titles.
Do you knock Errol Spence at all for the car accident? No, does that take any luster away from a great year? What? I mean,
It doesn't.
So does that mean you don't knock Josh Taylor at all for pleading guilty to a racist outburst against?
Yeah, that was weird, right?
I mean, that's a crime he committed that takes away from his Fighter of the Year campaign, right?
I ended up having Josh Taylor sixth, and that's almost criminal because he had such a great year.
Horanchik and then Progre?
Yeah, I put him number six in my Fighter of the Year voting. Canelo, Spence, Pacquiao. Number four, Rafe, Nayoa Inoue. The damn monster rolled through the WBSS, rolled through what was left in the jar of Donaire and a Fight of the Year contender. Moved up
right
in weight
roll
yet again, dude. You're right, not a roll through. Moved up in weight yet again and continues to prove he's a stud. And then I give five to Deontay Wilder. And I could see if you could be angry that Taylor's resume was better, but...
You big daughter, Brian.
Nah, dude, I mean, I think I'm the only one in the world here who thinks Luis Ortiz is really good. He's really freaking good. And Deontay Wilder, you know, blew away Boobs Brazil, and then knocks out Ortiz in a very competitive fight. And I don't know, he had a great year. Josh Taylor's in this conversation. Would you throw votes anywhere else? Teofimo Lopez Jr.?
He did fight four times and came through big time in the end of the year. But no, look, it might just be that year. Let's give it to Canelo and hope that we never have to do it again.
All right, what about at light heavyweight? Artur Beterbiev, would you give him a vote?
He needed to do more. He had what, two fights? He beat Hot Rod, and then maybe the win of the year at the against Vozdik, and really put himself on the map there in a way that we expected. We thought he might be that good, but now we know he is. Huge performance. I would say that with the right matchups, maybe Beterbiev could be a 2020 fighter of the year if he's busy enough, if he gets the right names on his resume.
All right, Rafe, 2019 Network of the Year in boxing. It's a more heated sort of discussion than normal because of the streaming wars. DAZN made a hell of a run. Their second half fight season, they brought it. Overall, Fox makes a statement. Showtime hung out. ESPN and Top Rank were big time business. Who was your network of the year?
So I think it is, you got to be to just straight up. DAZN had the most really, really good fights on its network. If you look down the list, DAZN scored the most. But for me, it's Fox, and it's not just because it had some great fights, and I'm not crazy about the pay-per-view aspect of many of its best fights, or at least its biggest fights, but it's really me. I think that for all of the good that DAZN did in 2019, all of the great fights that appeared on that network and the great value, frankly, that it provides for boxing fans, whether they're choosing to pay $100 for the year, or they're going to do kind of hop in and out for the $20 monthly fees when it makes sense. But DAZN loses some points in my book for also being, I think, I don't know, the sleaziest of them all this year. All of the really sort of things that made me groan about boxing, the most cynical, scummy things, they were DAZN moves. Logan Chavez, Paul and KSI.
Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., yes.
Is that all of like the disgusting cash grabs, that this is the most just reminding us of how amoral and disgusting we are as sentient human beings. DAZN did that more than anyone else. And that's not what I watch boxing for. I know it's part of the sport, but that's not why I love this sport. And I don't need to be reminded of it at every turn. I don't need someone making me feel like the skell I am deep down inside.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed on that one. I'm going to give it to Fox as well. They filled my pockets very nicely, but even obviously beyond that, it wasn't a perfect year. But I think they raised the profile of the sport. I mean, when you're promoting big boxing matches in your NFL coverage, your World Cup coverage, your pro wrestling SmackDown coverage, I mean, look, that matters. That got people to gain attention. They committed to shoulder program, even if some of those shoulder programs might go away, Rafe. They committed to shoulder programming, and the matchups were fairly consistent. Started to tail off by the end, but they were fairly consistent. We got to see stars. We got to see good fights. I mean, you got J-Rock and Hurd on real TV. You can't really complain too much. I didn't love some of the editorial decisions. I didn't love the broadcast team. I certainly didn't love the let's not have Terrence Crawford or WBO recognized and all that crap. But their commitment to live streaming on FS1, the Fox card press conferences and weigh-ins, like, they tried to make it big. They tried to make it, their UFC style of rollout coverage. And I think that combined with putting on some really big fights on pay-per-view and making them feel really big, that's it, Rafe. That's it right there. Although, shout out to DAZN for making an effort. ESPN just is what it is with the – it's like Bob's got – at Top Rank, certainly he's got some names, and then certainly he's building big for the future. I mean, those prospects are about to bust out and be stars, but they're still limited by the scope of who they have.
I think they also are they just sort of have to stay the course, because it is an enormous advantage, I think, overall and in the long run, to be affiliated with ESPN, because the Fox deal is great while it lasts, but then PBC may have to go find a new home after that. And I'm saying, look, Al Haymon is really good at that. He's always been successful at finding new homes for his content when he needs to, and he's really creative with it. So it probably won't be a problem. But being
Al Haymon, a goat.
Yeah, he's a goat. But being connected to you know, the network that is synonymous in North America with sports, with ESPN, is a big benefit to Top Rank. And I think they, in acknowledging that, it seemed like they took a few, you know, they're willing to compromise a little bit to meet ESPN's needs, right? Putting big fights on ESPN Plus when they probably could have, they would have done much better in terms of overall audience on linear cable. But sticking with being a good partner to ESPN can be very good to Top Rank in the long run. I think it will also be good to boxing because you want ESPN with real skin in the game when it comes to boxing so that they cover the sport fully. We don't have these things where we never see boxing on SportsCenter, which was often the case back in the day when Friday Night Fights was the only boxing on ESPN.
Indeed, indeed. Are you okay with me giving 2019 Promoter of the Year to Eddie Hearn? Look, with the DAZN expansion, he made this whole idea of a U.S. invasion work. He's doing giant things. Some of it's scummy, but he's doing big things in this game. I thought it was a big year for Eddie.
Yeah, the man, so, you know, look, some of the individual decisions you can quibble with and you can quibble strongly with, but he works his balls off and he's funny and engaging and entertaining. And he is a, like, almost like a modern day Bob Arum in the, how funny and charismatic he can be, but he does it in a way that it feels fresh and young. And I love Bob's, 80-year-old man act, but, Hearn, yeah, the guy is a hustler and he's fun to watch. And if DAZN's platform grows or years down the line, Matchroom USA ends up working on with other platforms. I just mean with a bit, however Hearn gets exposed to a bigger audience here in the States, I think people will embrace him because the guy's hilarious.
I think he has like Dana White potential in boxing, although it's hard because he's, you know, the PBC has the larger stable, although they don't have a public spokesman, but he's the one who's willing to do so many, you know, he's the one who stays late, like he says, at all the press conference, like he does all the interviews and really puts it out there and tries to sell it. And I just think when he's vibrant and young and charismatic, it helps a lot. And look, he's been creative. He's signed new fighters. Like he's done some good things there. Rafe, I got to hit you with this. Okay.
We good friends. I love you, daddy, but let's get it on. Hey.
Daddy of the year in boxing in 2019. There's a lot of daddies in boxing. I mean, Anthony Bonsante was the 2005 boxing daddy of the year.
Yeah.
He was the number one daddy
of the year.
He was the number one daddy.
Look, it was a down year for Angel Garcia.
It was. It really was.
Maybe it's because Danny didn't have as many high profile fights. It was a rebuilding year for Danny. It was not Danny's year. Maybe Angel got the message that he wasn't always helping with some of his more wild antics.
Rafe, I know who the daddy of the year is.
Oh, wait, I know now. You know, I know
I take
too.
Advantage, and it? Then when I shoot my shot, I shoot, you know, for the KO.
I believe that's the zaddy of the year.
New father, Ryan Garcia, Rafe. Knocking dudes out in the ring, shooting his shot outside of it, Rafe. Father of the year.
All right. I think that's not bad, Brian. But come on, there. I can't believe it took this long for me to figure this out. That I brain farted this long. He never jacks. He's X-rated, and you're not. He is the dad of the year every year, even when he's in prison. John Fury, Big John, is the dad of the year.
Love it. Love it indeed. All right, Rafe. Are you ready for this? Knockout of the year. My choice, Rafe. Deontay Wilder's one shot against Dominic Brazil. No, we didn't think Brazil was going to win that fight. But it was a credible enough contender, a stay busy fight, a fight that we had interest, we needed to see. I was ringside in Brooklyn. It was the first round. It was the first giant punch he threw. He knocked that guy out. Yes, credit Brazil for awakening and actually reaching his feet. But you want to talk about producing a one-punch highlight onto your reel and showing those reactions of Ray Flores' brother, Miguel, and everyone else sitting around me. Somehow I was the only one with a straight face. It was thunderous. It was brutal. There's some good knockouts. A lot of under the radar knockouts this year of knockout of the year. But I look, when it's all said and done, if they ran a highlight package, I think that's the one where you're like, damn. I mean, that's what Wilder does. He did it. That's highlight reel stuff, Rafe.
Look, that one certainly is worthy of consideration. And I can't really argue with you much because my choice is Deontay Wilder knocking out Luis Ortiz. That one, because it was against the much better fighter in a fight where Wilder had lost pretty much every moment of the competition up until landing that shot at the end of round seven that put it away. Just the image of all of the hair, the sweat in Luis Ortiz's hair flying out of his head and showering ringside. And then the look on Ortiz's face when he was down and had the, you know, basically did a version of the Curtis Stevens. Whoa, what was that, man? That to me was the knockout of the year. And because he was actually counted out, despite making a game effort to get up, count is not going the books as a TKO like the Brazil one does.
Yeah. And, you know, considering he was losing that fight badly, and then it really wasn't like the type of knockout shot, like turn someone's chin. It was like straight onto the forehead and he destroyed him with it. It was insane. My number two, Rafe, and shout out to this one, Devin Haney against Antonio Moran.
Yep.
Good Lord. That's just one of those like, oh my God. That's the Manny Stewart type of knockout of the year, Rafe. Okay. You got that?
Oh my God.
I mean, look at this.
Look at this.
Yeah. Rafe, I'm going to give a couple shout outs here. Do you like them? Callum Smith, Hassan Endom. Remember that one?
Hmm.
Cruiserweight knockout of the year. Unie Dorticos sending Andrew Tabidi to hell.
That one was amazing. Oh, I forgot that one. That might be better than everything we talked about.
Virgil Ortiz against Mauricio Herrera on the Canelo undercard. Do you remember that one? Go revisit that collaboration. Teo's one against Richard Kami was solid. Tramell Charlo Jorge Cota was good. Jesus Ramos against Ricky Edwards on a PBC undercard. You may not remember the knockout, Rafe, but you sure as hell do remember the double raygasm that was brought out from that.
A right hook upstairs. Edwards shakes his head as the boom shakalaka right and out win Edwards.
Wow, Ray, dig it again,
we'll
brother.
Wow,
Rafe. Okay, shout out to that indeed. Yes. Rafe Bugs, do you have a choice for boxing 2019 fight of the year?
Brian, there are still good fights coming through, coming down the pipe. But I'm going to go with a guy we should have mentioned in the dad of the year conversation.
For having a wife that would make the Jaren's friends wonder if they'd risk it all?
Look, because he is the dad of the year and the husband of the year, that kind of stuff doesn't go down. And I don't even entertain that kind of notion, Brian. But yes, Nonito Donaire against Naoya Inoue, the extremely high level of that fight, the back and forth action, the momentum swings, the inspirational effort, the last hurrah style performance that you saw from Donaire stepping up in that moment when everyone thought it was like sending this, you know, poor old man to be slaughtered by the monster and getting up from that body shot that he had no business getting up from. The losing effort, it was beautiful. And then the moment at the end and finding out after the fact that, you know, Ue was fighting through having his orbital bone fractured in the second round by a vintage Nonito left hook, had his nose broken in the fight, was visibly hurt bad, saw him overcome those moments, learned more about him as a fighter.
Humbling.
It was everything boxing is about.
And I love old guys pouring out the jug that last time. It was the final of a tournament, unified titles. It was like the first time Nao Inoue, who's like a candidate for Fighter of the Year and Pound for Pound King, was like really, really, really challenged Rafe. That is damn right the fight of the year in boxing in 2019. It wins my award. It wins CBS Sports' award on a panel of a voting panel of our writers and editors. Great, great stuff. Had really everything. And it was at a high level and pace, and it was violent, and it was beautiful. Honorable mentions. I want to shout out number two. I gave it to Errol Spence, Sean Porter. You hate that? I thought it was a great fight.
No, I don't hate that. I mean, look, there's a lot of – when you start getting into the honorable mentions, there's so many good fights this year. Did you see that list that the great Kurt Emhoff,
yes,
Boxing Esquire, put out? I mean, there's about 20 deep. There's like two dozen strong fights. And you know my man Maccabi Games, Ilunga Makabu, had two on there.
Yes. And also, I didn't even have Jarrett Hurd, Julian Williams in my top five. Two of the editors at my staff voted at number two in their rankings, and that's fine, right? It didn't make the BWAA Final Five. It could have easily been there. That was a very good fight. No one's given love to Sergey Lipinets and Lamont Peterson. Revisit that collaboration, please. It was violent as hell. Send Lamont Peterson to retirement. And Rafe, my number three, I was ringside for it. It's also your women's boxing fight of the year. Katie Taylor and that reckless cop, Delphine Persoon. Rafe, that ish was crazy.
Make it say, wee.
Shout out to Triple G, Sergey Derevyanchenko, Rafe. Okay. You got any others you want to hit up? Did you like SSR Estrada 2? It was more tactical than normal.
Right. I think it suffers from not being as good as the first.
Shout out to Keith Thurman. Manny Pacquiao was high theater. Oh, dude, Jose Ramirez, Mo Hooker.
I think that one is super underrated, Brian. When you go back and watch that, yes, Ramirez got the better of him throughout the fight, but there were moments where before Ramirez hurt and stopped Hooker, it kind of looked like the sort of fight where Ramirez was doing the more steady work and maybe winning rounds, but Hooker was, there were moments where he was hurting Ramirez worse. And that he might, if the fight went on, he might stop Ramirez late. Then out of nowhere, that amazing finish where Ramirez landed the left hook that hurt Hooker, realized it, pounced on him in an instant, and threw 10 unanswered punches, connected on most of them to get him out of there on the ropes. Talk about a high pace, back and forth, tons of action in just six rounds. That one way kind of flying under the radar, and it shouldn't. It was fun.
I mean, Josh Taylor Regis Prograis was like the perfect sort of title fight final in that tournament. Unification, both guys going for it, close on the cards. That's in the conversation. Remember that Can Zhu versus Manny Robles III? That was pure war.
Anytime you see Can Zhu, the new Can Man, in the ring, you know it's going to be fun because he's just out there popping off punches like it's nothing. He's popping cherries.
And shout out to Brandon Figueroa and Julio Ceja. That was a late entry, but that one was good as well.
Rafe, Rico and Ceja.
Yeah, you're damn right, Rafe. Here it is. It's an important one. 2019 Listener of the Year. Rafe, 2 years running. Basically, in a landslide, it's the Alex Godinez of Sacramento. But I got news for the Alex Godinez's of the world. Let me
BEST, Brian.
Let me say first something.
Let me say first something. We have a new Manny Pacquiao.
We have a new Rafe. I didn't consult with you. But if we're voting this year, we've got a new Alex Godinez, and his name is that quality bloke. That guy is funny. That guy's British. He loves us. His Twitter's wild, Rafe. He's got my high school cross-country picture as an avatar. That guy brings it, Rafe. I think he may have grabbed that baton this year.
Wow, Brian.
Are you gonna second that, Rafe?
Oh, look, I'm Switzerland in this, man. I'm Ray Charles to the BS.
Rafe, you're one half of this podcast. You need to vote on this.
Look, if I vote, then I could create a tie, and then we have no listener of the year. I don't want to put myself, put any of us in that position, Brian. It's you are the captain of this ship, and what you say goes. You are the captain now, sir.
All right, don't mess with it, you know.
Let me tell you, don't you tinkle with the finkle.
Shout out to Quality Bloke. Shout out to Alex Godinez, always in our heart. Number two on our scorebook this year, though. And, you know, we've run down the list before. We love us.
So basically, to anyone who wants to compete for this, what Brian is telling you is you need to dig up pictures of him in high school college and turn them into your Twitter avatar.
No. Rafe, 2019 round of the year. I think for the first 11 3/4 months, the round of the year was also part of the upset of the year. Round three, Andy Ruiz Jr., Anthony Joshua, the clear upset of the year, by the way, not even worth a mention because it's so clear, in which Ruiz gets up, knocks down Josh. I mean, it's hellacious. It's great. But Rafe, I'm sorry. No jokes aside, it ain't the round of the year. The round of the year is round nine. Jeff Horn, Michael Zarafa, part two. Rafe, Horn bleeding and fading. They bring in the doctor to examine it. And there's no Glenn Rushton who's telling him he better get effing inside on him, but he knew he needed to. And he drops Zarafa twice, straight out of like half Gotti Ward, half Corrales Castillo, put them together. It was like a damn movie, Rafe. What a round.
You better get inside on him, mate.
That should be a sound drop right there to itself, right?
Better get inside on that stripper.
Bartholomew was a freak. Yeah. Rafe, speaking of that, here we go. 2019. Oh, do you agree with that? We don't have the time. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that.
2019 soundboard MVP, not the button of the year, Rafe. The MVP of the soundboard for 2019 on the SOC Box podcast. Your choice.
It has to be Dwyer, even if there are better choices. There's no other. I mean, Dwyer is like 50% of the show.
Unfortunately, it is. It is Dwyer, Rafe. It is Dwyer, the week of the fight. Okay, it is. Once again, 2 years running, it is Dwyer. And I don't even, you know, I mean, come on.
You know. Hey, player, you've been, you know, having my name in your mouth. Here I am now.
Yeah.
Let's have at it.
Okay, I've been putting your name, your voice on my show many a times. I mean, come on, bro, you know?
He has a stick on
He does.
Him.
But Rafe,
do
terms-
you, Brian, have a favorite Dwyer drop? Can you even put something
all right,
out there?
Let me pause that conversation and just say quickly, honorable mention, Bob Arum made a run on our soundboard in 2019, right? He's making some late runs. Eddie Hearn's a player. Both Furies are players. And you can't look past Teddy Atlas, bro.
All true.
He's been doping since the beginning on this show. I mean, he's been popping, soundboarding. You got any other people you want to shout out in terms of their the years they had on this soundboard?
Well, look, it's not. I don't know if he's the most prolific on there, but Aegis Klimas has been fantastic of late.
Yes, of late he is certainly making a run. You know.
Oh, that's gonna be a challenge. Prepare your horse for the war.
I think he actually meant horse, Rafe. I think he actually did there, all right. Rafe, your favorite Dwyer sound drop. Well, let's start here. This is an important one. This is probably the most important award we have. Sound drop of the year in 2019.
Oh, my God. I think it comes from the epic performance Dwyer put in prior to Canelo and Danny Jacobs previewing that fight earlier this year when we got things. That was when we first talked about Hooters in Campbell, California,
yes.
A great place to catch a Canelo fight. That was where we got Danny has a stick.
Yes. So were you going to call his first Hooters breakdown as the sound drop of the year?
That's the sound drop of the year. Yes.
Hey, Ray Mancini came out of nowhere to make a little bit of a move.
Not in my book. I'm not a Mancini.
You know, I mean, come on.
A stunning blow.
He went down like a ton of bricks.
All right, maybe it's not your cup of tea, but I think this might be the sound drop of the year, Rafe. I think it might get the most play. Are you ready?
To paraphrase Diddy and B.I.G., more money, more problems.
No, that's not it. That's not it. I really meant to play. I really meant to play the other one. You know which one I wanted to play, right? Right?
Make that money, player.
That's it, Rafe. That's the sound drop of the year in 2019, right?
Right.
I mean, come on. That's it. I think that's magic. All right. Exactly. Rafe, guest of the year for the 2019 SOC podcast. It sure ain't Tyson Fury. It sure ain't Bud Crawford.
I was gonna say Bud Crawford. I thought he was fantastic. Tony Harrison. I didn't listen to that, but you sold me on it, and I love me some Tony Harrison.
You know where it was, right? Was that this calendar year when we got you and I got Bob Arum in Vegas?
That had to be last year. I haven't been to Vegas in 2019.
Are you serious? I was gonna give it to Bob Arum.
I'm sorry, man. We, it wasn't this year.
Oh, it was. I know it was Todd Grisham. It was Todd Grisham during Danny Jacobs Canelo fight week in DAZN on the bonus interview pod.
Okay, I'm with that.
All right, him and his brother used to bang it out in the past. All right, Rafe. 2019 sending Brian Campbell to hell in an interview award goes to. It's happened a few times now, Rafe.
It's tough. I'm tempted to go Jermall Charlo. Tempted to go Jermall Charlo for not doing it on the podcast, but for mistaking you for my colleague, Mike Coppinger,
yes,
at the airport. Then asking you if you was a snake or a lion.
Yes.
And continuing to call you Mike during the behind the scenes of your face-to-face.
No, that was on set. That didn't make the final cut. There's also a segment that on that show, he like straight up screamed at me during the show. And was like, yo, why you ain't asking me questions like that? And it was just like, damn, bro, you know?
Apparently you are a snake, Brian, not a lion.
All right. Indeed, Rafe, indeed.
Brian's only. No, it's got to be Fury, man. Fury, you got your hopes up, and Fury stomped on them. He made them. He did them dirtier than he did the Schwartz.
He made me flip cheeseburgers, Rafe, if you will. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you will. Rafe, do you have any other awards you wanted to give out, Rafe?
Yes, I wanted to give Andy Ruiz's nutritionist the Dietitian of the Year award. We saw him make that big old cheesy omelet on the skillet during the Dank City videos. Congrats, sir. You are the nutritionist of the year. 283.7, baby.
Rafe, 2019 Boxing Shoulder Program of the Year. Your thoughts?
Face-to-face. PBC face-to-face.
Do you have a favorite episode that you didn't watch, Rafe?
All of them except for Harrison Charlo 2.
All right. Thank you. At least somebody put it up on YouTube. Yes, indeed. Rafe, thank you again. Thank you again for doing the show another calendar year, Rafe. You know, we do it for the people. You've done it all for the Nookie a few times.
Look, the Nookie is good.
We will be back this. I will be back this week with a bonus interview pod. A guy named Garcia. I'm not going to tell you which one, but there's going to be a guy named Garcia on it, among others. Okay, you're going to want to check that out. Rafe Boogs, it's the holiday season, bro, in Detroit. You got plans? What's going on?
Yeah, my lady and I are, because we got nothing to do, we are driving down to Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow, home of the Louisville Lip.
Around Christmas. What's that?
Home of the Louisville Lip, Muhammad Ali.
Exactly, yeah. I'm going to visit Ali's grave, the museum.
So you're going to spend Christmas in Louisville?
Yeah, for no damn reason.
All right. I like that, yeah. Rafe. All right.
Well, you know, move to a new part of the country. Might as well see the country.
I'm going to make you my girlfriend.
Yeah, well, you might over this holiday season. You might. All right. Yeah, okay. That's great. Do you know what we normally do with women on the show, though, Rafe?
I normally don't do interviews with women unless I fornicate with them.
Yeah. Do we have any female guests this year?
Oh, Michaela. You talked to Michaela Meyer.
Michaela Meyer.
You played that drop for her.
Yeah. We had Sunisa Estrada. Yeah. We had Marlene Esparza. Yeah, man. All right.
Marlene Wayans.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
White chicks right here.
Hey, what do you think Barbecue Bob's doing for Christmas?
Hey, he's reffing games, just chilling, kicking back. You know, he can still hit threes basically all day. with his eyes closed. Shout out to Barbecue Bob.
All right, Rafe. Shout out to you. Shout out at State of Combat on Twitter. Shout out to The Athletic and Rafe Books. Please buy his books. Yo, it's holiday season. Rafe, can people still buy McCreagle and me, two and two, my dad in a light and dark?
All of that, Brian. And, give me that money, player. You could get two and two, McSorley's My Dad and Me with myself and Mark Kriegel. You can get Pacific Rims, a book about Philippine basketball that I wrote. You can get Basketball, Love and Basketball, A Love Story, a book I wrote last year with the great Jackie McMullen and Dan Flores.
Wait, did I not tell you about that book?
Some still even in stores. What's up?
Did I not tell you I read that entire book in one sit in on my cruise? No, in Jamaica in October. I read the entire book cover to cover in Jamaica.
Oh, so you were ready to talk to Nick Anderson.
Damn right I was. Yeah, yeah, right, indeed. Pacific Rims, that's interesting. Yusuf Mack, noted boxer, has a book out called Philly Rims, Rafe.
I'm not familiar with that program, Ryan. Yeah. I'm going to have to ask Eric Raskin about that one.
All right. Hey, thank you, people, for being on this journey with us. Enjoy your holiday season, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, whatever you got going on. Enjoy it. Be with the family. You know, if you can't be with them, call home. Say hi to mom and dad. Tell their parents they said hi as well. Rafe Books, thank you. Do you have any words for the people?
Yo.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.